no matter what people say, tell me that it's going on. Tell me who cares about what they say.
You know me, I'm the hottest in the street.
WJMS, this is According to RP.
Turn up the volume, kick back, and get raw with us.
From the latest hip-hop beats,
spazzle,
to social issues that cripple the black community, all from the perspective of a young, strong black woman.
A strong black woman.
And now your host, Rita.
Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of According to RP on WJMS Radio. It's your host, Rita Pierre, and I am so excited for today's show. There's a lot going on, and definitely stay tuned, grab your drinks, stay connected. But I really hope that you guys had a wonderful weekend. I know it was the holiday weekend, the Columbus Day / Indigenous Peoples Day holiday. I definitely have my opinions as to this co-naming situation. But I don't have time to talk about it today, so follow me on social media at According to RP on Instagram and Facebook, and you will be able to partake in the discussion. But definitely a couple quick shout outs. So last week we went live, and I had failed to properly record the episode, and so therefore some of the shout outs went unheard. So shout out to my best friend, Lolo Sofocus, Lori Wendy, an amazing author, by the way. Go get her book, High Stakes, available on Instagram. She celebrated her birthday on October 8th, on Columbus Day. And so happy birthday to my bestie. Also, I wanted to shout out Jaleesa Joseph and Randy Bastien, who recently got married and are living their best lives on their honeymoon right now. So congratulations, Jaleesa. Jaleesa is my adoptive daughter from when I worked at the DA's office, so she holds a very special place in my heart. So definitely congratulations on your union. And I'm going to give a little shout out to my goddaughter, who's going to be turning 2 on October 17th. So happy birthday, Shasha. Your godmommy loves you. So moving along to our Urban Dictionary. This week it's words of the week. I have 3 Urban Dictionary words, and you guys will understand why once I'm done.
Do you understand the words that are coming out of my mouth?
May I have the definition?
What does skeet skeet mean?
It's on fleek.
Can you use it in a sentence?
Popping on fleek.
Is it lit?
It's gonna be lit.
Major key.
It's time for the Urban Dictionary word or phrase of the week.
So, our Urban Dictionary, for the first Urban Dictionary word of the week, is cavernosious. So, the feeling you get when you're ready to vomit after going 100 kegs or burst at Beach Week. Example given, I'm going to be a member of the Beach Week Ralph Club for sure. Man, oh man, am I cavernosious. The second word, cavernaughty. When a man is drinking beer and only beer and is in the mood to rape or molest a woman. Example given, 3 Miller Lights later, I was pushing her around, getting cavernaughty. And the last phrase, Brett Kavanaugh drunk. To become so intoxicated, you have no recollection of waving your dick around like you just don't care. Example given, man, I went to that party and I wasn't just trashed. I wasn't just wasted. I was straight up Brett Kavanaugh drunk. My people, are we not disturbed? Are we not confused? Are we not feeling sick inside that the man who on Saturday, for those of you who were not up on the news, was confirmed as the 114th Supreme Court Justice of our land, Mr. Brett Kavanaugh, that this individual has 3, probably more if I keep scrolling, definitions on UrbanDictionary.com describing his unscrupulous acts and his temperament and his character. Like, this is the man who's going to be the Supreme Court Justice, who's going to preside over some of the highest, most important cases known to man. I don't even know how to feel, how to think. I can tell you this, though. I knew that he was going to get confirmed, even though a white woman came forward, a white woman of Miss Ford's stature, Dr. Ford's stature, let me give her respect, came forward and accused this man of doing these things to her. Even though she was white, it was not enough to stop this man from becoming the Supreme Court justice. And with the help of white women, I might add. But that's going to be another conversation because we don't have time for all that today. But I'm disturbed. I don't know if you guys are. It is what it is. But I have some good news for you guys because the big it's time for the big up of the week.
Watch it. When you feel big up, big up. All of the woman them big up, big up. All of the girl them big up, big up. All of the woman them big up, big up. Whoa.
So our big up of the week is given to Dante Palmer, a 31-year-old Florida man who's doing great things. Now, I was able to find out about Dante Palmer from TheRoot.com. The Root is a very reputable news outlet that reports on black people. So that's why I love going to them. And you're not just getting ratchet stuff there. You're getting quality information. So, you know, the Shade Room, I love the Shade Room. You know, you're able to get some stuff from there too. But I like the reporting of The Root. So that's where I tend to go when I want to find out about my people. So, according to TheRoot.com, Dante Palmer, who was a 31-year-old Florida man, you know, started this, went viral basically with his hashtag, Squat for Change. And basically what he did was document his experience trying to change his 1-year-old child in a public restroom, in a men's restroom. And so this whole thing came about because he had to sit on the floor. He had to squat on the floor and change his child in the men's restroom. And so he's calling for there to be diaper changing tables and whatnot installed in men's restrooms, in public men's restrooms particularly. And I agree with him because to be very honest, as a woman, I never even thought to have changing diaper tables in a man's restroom. I never thought about that. I always just automatically think that if a child needs to go to the bathroom, if a child needs to be changed, the woman is going to do it. And it's not fair because we have a lot of men out there who are really doing their thing, raising these children in these streets. And we need to be able to help equip them with the proper tools to be able to do what they need to do as well too. And so Dante Palmer, I salute you for coming forward and for documenting your change and for starting this Squat for Change thing and making it go viral. I mean, you have the attention of T.I., D.L. Hughley. We have a councilman from Baltimore who's already writing a bill called the Diaper Duty Bill to install diaper changing stations in men's restrooms in the Baltimore City Hall. And so we're hoping that this trend, you know, that this does truly go viral and that this becomes a national thing because we, in this day and age, as we are moving forward and forward, more and more men are stepping up, more and more men are, you know, rearing children even on their own. And so we need to be able to give them the support. And something like this it's a minor thing for us to do to help them out. Put the changing tables in the men's bathroom and help, let's give these men the support that they need. So I commend you, Dante Palmer for doing, as a young black man, doing what you're doing. So with every high, you know, there is a low. And our womp womp of the week is Senator Susan Collins, who is the Republican senator from the state of Maine. Now, the reason she is the womp womp of the week, and I'm not going to go too deep into it because that could be another show. I can go on all day if I'm talking about her, is that she is one of the women. I don't know if she's the only woman. I got to do that research, but she is definitely the woman that everybody's talking about. Who voted to confirm Brett Kavanaugh as a Supreme Court justice. And people are going crazy to the point where the state of Maine is not here for it. They are not happy with her vote to confirm. In fact, the world isn't happy because right now, from what I'm reading from these articles online, is that The people are boycotting the state of Maine. So their products, the tourism, people are actually boycotting Maine because of Senator Collins' actions. And the people of Maine, like I said, are not having it to the point where, and I believe this might have been on one of the CNN articles I read, that there was a collection plate, if you will, taken to raise money for whoever the opponent is in the 2020 election, just to prevent Susan Collins from moving forward and from becoming senator again. Like, and so actually, I have it here, Politico.com. Politico.com is the one that presented this particular article where basically $4 million in escrow, over $4 million in escrow has been collected for Collins' opponent since she supported Kavanaugh. And so, I mean, this has some serious repercussions. And I think what got me is the fact that she really came out of her face to not just support Brett Kavanaugh, but basically, in a sense, call Dr. Ford a liar, because she's like, although I feel for her, she does not believe that Brett Kavanaugh was the assailant, was Ford's assailant. So she's basically saying, listen here, I'm sure something happened to you, but it wasn't Brett. And for me, that's a slap in the face, because I believe Ford. And I also, I mean, she has so much at stake to lose here. And she came forward and was brave enough to say what she had to say. And you have this other woman out here, Senator Collins, who's of equal notoriety, who literally is like, yeah, nah, I don't think so. Like, for me, you know, white women championed, or you know, at least brought forward this Me Too movement, right? And here you have another woman who doesn't believe another woman, another white woman at that, and is supporting, like, my thing. And again, I know I said I wasn't going to go too much into it. We'll have to go on it on another day. Is that let's take away the accusations, because we're supposed to live in a society where you're innocent until proven guilty, right? But Brett Kavanaugh's temperament when addressing the issue in the hearings, for me, enough was not the temperament needed to be a Supreme Court justice. Your temperament behind closed doors, if you wanted to curse and be upset at home, you could do what you need to do. But you were on national television, global television, acting a fool, being aggressive. Your actions alone let me know that something must have went down. So for me, for her to go against the grain in a sense and move forward and vote for his confirmation was disgusting to me. So that's why, Susan Collins, you get the womp womp of the week.
All right, everyone. So today I am here with one of my very good friends who is going to be a guest on our show today. Please introduce yourself.
Hi, everyone. My name is Audace Garnett, and I am excited about being here. Rita is actually one of my former colleagues, and whatever she's doing, I'm here and ready to support. So thank you for having me.
No, of course. And I know that last year around this time, you were actually on my podcast, Frida's World, where yes. we discussed domestic violence. Mm-hmm. So for those of you who are just tuning in, October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month, and it would, you know, I would be remiss if I didn't have at least one episode that was dedicated to domestic right. violence awareness, mm-hmm. because it's a serious issue that's affecting our community each and every day. And many of you all might, if it's not you yourself, might have a loved one going through it, or a yes. friend going through it. Yes. So this is not something that's like, you know, remote. Right. I believe that at least everyone at least has one person that they know of that is experiencing some form of domestic violence. So it's very important for us to talk about it. And so that's why I have my girl Audace here,
yes.
who I deem to be an expert, because when we used to work together, we worked at the district attorney's office mm-hmm. in the Domestic Violence Bureau. Yes. So that's how we met. And so I know of your work yes, and know of your expertise, you. And you're still in this field.
Absolutely.
So could you just tell us a little bit about yourself and a little bit about how you got into this type of work and what you currently do?
Sure. So let me just first start out by saying that these thoughts are mine and do not reflect those thoughts or beliefs of any organization that I'm connected to or affiliated with. I am Audace Garnett, as I mentioned, and I am the founder of Ascension Advocacy and Consulting. That is a organization that I started and created in December, and I started that out of the need. My community has a need, extreme need. I'm still seeing a lot of domestic violence, sex trafficking, sexual assault going on in my community, and not a lot of people are aware of that. So I created that organization so that I can educate and inform those that are in my community, and also create a blueprint for young people that are growing up in areas such as South Jamaica, which is where I'm from, and East New York, which is where I went to high school. My daughter as well, I have a 6-year-old daughter, and I think I owe it to her to mm-hmm. you know, pave a path to show her what healthy relationship should look like, and so on and so forth.
Well, first of all, big congratulations to starting your own business.
Yes.
That is a huge undertaking.
Absolutely.
And you should definitely be commended for doing that.
Thank you.
Especially in an area like this. I feel like there's I mean, a lot of people want to start businesses. They want to start, you know, do services and all this other stuff. But domestic violence issues, people tend to shy away from that because of how heavy it is.
Absolutely.
And so for you to take that on, you know, and then actually create a business in a sense, or a service, I guess a service-based business, is that how we call it, to address these issues, definitely, you know, I tip my hat to you.
Thank you, Rita. Thank you. The issue is that, and I know you know that from doing this work as well, is that a lot of people don't receive the help and information and education that they need until they have this experience. So it's important that we go out and educate beforehand so that people can know what the warning signs are, what to look for, so on and so forth before they, you know.
No, definitely. Okay.
Thank you.
So let's get into some of the myths about domestic violence, if we can start there, because I find that, and for me, when I was working in the DA's office prior to that, I knew what domestic violence was.
Right.
I mean, I might have had a family member or two or friends that, you know, kind of exposed me to that world of domestic violence. Like, you would hear about certain things, but I didn't really know and understand, you know, both what the victim goes through and even what the perpetrator, you know, goes through, until I started working at the Domestic Violence Bureau in the DA's office. And so I find that for me, I had to actually be in a setting working with victims to know what domestic violence truly was. And if I had not had that experience, I think I would have a lot of, I would you know, kind of be grounded in a lot of these myths.
Yes.
Like one of them being, you know, that domestic violence is, you know, is a crime of, you know, poor people.
Yes.
And so I want to go through a couple of some of these, like, I would say well-known myths of domestic violence to kind of debunk, you know, them for some people, because I feel like most people really don't understand what it actually is.
Right. Absolutely.
Okay. So I know that I had sent you, you know, some myths that I found on, you know, found on the internet.
Yes.
I kind of did like a general Google search because I felt like it would represent the majority. So the first myth about domestic violence is that domestic abuse is only physical, right? So could you just talk about, you know, what are some of the other forms of domestic abuse that one would experience?
Absolutely. So people oftentimes think that domestic violence is only physical. They probably base it off of, you know, what they see on Lifetime, you know, the black and blue eye or the injuries, right? Or something that they've seen on Law and Order. However, domestic violence can take shape in several forms. There's emotional abuse, calling you names, putting you down, saying negative things about you, speaking about your family members, taking an insecurity and throwing it back in your face. There's financial abuse, taking your money, not allowing you to work, injuring you so bad that you can't go to work, calling your job several times and making you get fired, or spreading rumors at your job, right? And, you know, just causing and creating a bad reputation for you. There's sexual abuse as well. A lot of times, you know, we feel that because we're in a relationship that we have to have sex with that person. But, you know, if a person, you know, has sex with you and you've told them no, that's sexual abuse inside of a relationship. And we've seen that several times within our office and within our work. Damaging condoms, not allowing you to use contraceptive, all of that is sexual abuse. Technological abuse, which is something that I primarily focus on in my my day job. So stalking you, harassing you online, right? Creating false accounts, impersonating you, damaging your cell phone, tagging you in nude photos, sharing nude photos of you that you gave consent, you know, while you were in a relationship, you gave consent, and they then share those photos online, creating false pages, as I mentioned. That's something that I've seen happen a lot of times.
That, yeah, and I actually want to ask about that, because I think the technological abuse part is something that most people would never even in their wildest dreams consider to be domestic abuse.
Right.
And I mean, I've even heard people that I know who've said that, you know, they know somebody who created a fake page to follow their boyfriend or their ex or whatever the case is. And so that seems to be, like, in the age of social media, it seems to be a thing, but I would have never thought that that would be considered abuse.
Right. Absolutely. It definitely is. And because technology has become so intertwined in our lives, and it's just so much a part of us that we may not think anything of it. Mm-hmm. But a person going into your phone and you know, looking through your text messages, like, that's not okay. That means that that person doesn't trust you. And if there's no trust in a relationship, that's not healthy. Mm-hmm. So there's several things and several ways that technology could be used to abuse. So is definitely on the high risk factor.
Okay. So now, the other myth that, you know, we hear that domestic abuse is really something that affects women. So basically that only men are abusers. So what is your take on that?
Well, let me just say this. From doing direct services and working with survivors, I want to say that the primary gender that we would usually see are women walking through our doors.
Okay. Okay. Same thing too. When I was at the office, it was mostly women. Mostly it was women. Here and there you'd find a male.
Absolutely. So, men are the primary aggressors of this crime. And I don't want to get into, you know, all of that. However, men are and can be abused. And there are several barriers that prevent men from reporting. However, men can be physically abused, emotionally abused, sexually abused. All of the risk factors that, you know, women face and experience in these type of relationships, men can experience them as well. The stereotypes and the stigma to, you know, report, you know, men are supposed to be strong. They're supposed to be the breadwinner and all of these different things prevent men from reporting. They may feel that the police may laugh at them or they may be weak or soft, you know, those stereotypes. They may be weak or soft if they do report. But they do report. They do experience this and... there may be a lot more men that will come forward if we normalized, you know.
Yeah, and I think, yeah, if we normalize it and if we have an open mind as to, you know, who in a sense can be victims of domestic violence. Because I can tell you at, you know, in my entire time working in that bureau, I might have had maybe three cases where they were men, but they were homosexual men. So I've actually never had a case of domestic violence where a straight man came forward. And so I think that, and I, now looking back at some of the, you know, incidences that I saw growing up where, you know, you would always hear where the woman is the one who handles the finances or the woman is the one that wears the pants and you saw. Now I go back and I'm like, I did see tension and aggression in that household. So now I'm like, that must be the domestic violence. Because if we saw it in the reverse, where the man was the one only dealing with the finance, like when you get paid, you bring your check to me, we would consider that now as domestic violence against a woman. So I think there are a lot more incidences of domestic violence toward men, but because they don't come forward.
I would see heterosexual and homosexual cases. And even with people that identify as LGBTQ, they're a lot, you know, they may experience it a lot more than those that are straight because of the barrier, you know, the shame. Maybe they didn't come out to their family that they, you know, identify as LGBTQ. The police, you know, have, you know, there's so many barriers with systems, and we're going to get into that a little bit more down the line, but there's so many barriers with systems, and those that are marginalized experience this at a very high rate.
And I think just society as a whole, like, you know, is just like, eh, I don't really see it because we don't think it. And so I think we contribute to them not, you know, coming forward and reporting these things because we don't believe them. We really don't, to be honest. And I would say that even like before I started working at the office, because I had some of these preconceived notions of domestic violence and who again can be a victim, I could probably see myself as if somebody said, oh, this guy was abused or whatever, I'd be like, you know, but what did he do? You know, so I think we need to step away from that and be more open-minded so that, you know, these men can come forward. So the next myth that, you know, I feel like is looms out there is that, and this is the, I think this is one of the most serious ones for me, is that if the victim does not leave, then the situation is tolerable. I think many times I've at least heard where it's like, well, she must not be, and this is very, you know, very vulgar, very whatever, but she must not be getting beat that bad if she's still there.
Well, that can tie into why people remain in these situations. Let me just say this. People that are having this experience are not going to leave that situation until they're ready. And it's important that we, you know, open our eyes to that and that we're patient with them and support them throughout that process. So just because a person is remaining in that situation doesn't mean that, you know, they like that situation. They may be staying for several reasons. Do you want to get into why people remain?
Yeah, let's get into that.
Okay, so several things. Let's say that that person is undocumented, right? And the abuser is the one that's providing them with all of the resources. And they promise them to, you know, get them their paper. So you might remain in that situation. Now, we live in New York City where the rent is too damn high.
Girl.
Right?
Girl.
Okay, if that person is providing you with a roof over your head, you may just remain in that situation instead of going into a shelter. Like, a shelter is not a resort, okay?
So yeah.
When we tell people that they just need to get out and leave, it's hard to leave. It's really hard.
And the shelter thing, I think if we could just touch on that a bit. People think it's easy to get into a shelter. I've heard that all the time.
Oh,
like, they can just take their kids and go to a shelter.
Not at all.
It's actually not that simple.
It's not
favorable.
Absolutely.
Either.
And, you know, Rita, we're living in New York City, which is one of the most fortunate states that has a lot of resources for survivors of domestic violence. But even here, we're in a housing crisis, right?
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of women are often told that they can, you know, go into a shelter, but sometimes there are no beds in shelters. We have very few shelters for women and children. And a lot of times what women have to do is go into homeless shelters with general population where,
mm-hmm.
you know, they may be found by their abuser and they may not receive the same support that they need. And once they're in that shelter, what's the next step? You know, there's not really that much affordable housing. So there are a lot of barriers as to why people stay. People stay because of children as well.
Yeah.
You know, maybe you didn't grow up with your father in your life and you want your child to, you know, have that father in their life. So you might stay for that very same reason. Love, loyalty, support. I mean, you may think that that person is going to change. They've told you 1,000 times that they're going to change their ways and their behavior. So you're just holding on to who they were prior to,
mm-hmm.
you know, all of these bad incidents and acts happening. So it's something that we can't be judgmental about. People stay for, you know, their own reason and their own purpose. And when they're ready to leave, they will.
And the thing, too, is that domestic violence just doesn't happen overnight.
Right.
You know, that the abuser had to gain the trust of this, you know, of their victim. So it's something that took time. And so, you know, there's a manipulation that's involved.
Mm-hmm.
So the person that, you know, you go to work with them and you're like, oh, you know, Susan, she's, you know, she's a shark at work. She's
yes.
X, Y, and Z. But that doesn't mean that when she goes home, like, you don't know how many years of manipulation she's endured. And I feel like if that person is crafty, you know, I feel like anybody can fall victim under the hands of a master manipulator,
absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely. Oh my gosh. And let's get back to that. Anyone can be a victim of domestic violence and anyone can be an abuser. I've seen abusers that, you know, are clergy, you know, professors,
Jesus.
Doctors, people with professional titles. So we can't just reduce it to the guy on the corner that's doing this,
mm-hmm.
okay? This is something that anyone can do, okay? And a survivor, you know, can be anyone as well.
Yeah, I think that's really important to note, because I think many times people do think that a domestic violence happens in, like, you know, lower income households. It's a crime of, you know, poor people,
right.
or, you know, maybe somebody who's, you know, on, you know, they're on substances. So,
right.
you know, like, there's always something else. They don't really, like, they would never think that, you know, somebody of, like, well, for some reason Brett Kavanaugh's name is coming in my
Lord
mind, but somebody of his stature
right.
would be a domestic violence abuser,
mm-hmm.
you know what
mm-hmm.
I mean?
Absolutely.
And so a lot of times we're very classist, I think, in that, where we'll see this well-to-do gentleman or this well-to-do woman who's CEO, and we're like, she doesn't have time to engage in these activities.
Right.
And then we'll think that Tyrone on the corner is the one that's beaten his wife because he's, you know, living in a low income
mm-hmm.
situation and he's just frustrated. So he's just beating her out of frustration.
Right.
So I think it's important that people see that this is it's a classless crime.
Absolutely.
Anybody can do it.
Absolutely.
And I think that's what's scary, though,
mm-hmm.
for most people.
Yeah, absolutely. It really is.
Now, is there a way then to, because it's a classless crime and anybody can essentially be an abuser, are there signs that we can, like, look to see, like, you know, if we're dating somebody or even if it's not just like we're dating somebody, but, like, let's say, like, you know, if my sister is getting abused, is there a way that I could see from, like, even interacting with her, you know, either her husband or whatever, like, are there signs that can point to say this guy, he might be an abuser?
Well, there are several warning signs that you can look for. You know, has that person's behavior changed? Are they doing the things that they loved? Has their mood changed? Have they stopped hanging out with you? How do they speak of that person? And you, through engaging with that, you know, abuser, you know, could probably pick up on things as well. I hate to say, you know, do a Google search on someone or a background check.
But girl, you need to. Listen, in 2018, I mean, everybody needs to be Googled. Don't you date nobody without Googling them now.
I mean, I definitely suggest that you, you know, mm-hmm. do your research, okay? Because people are fearful of dating. Let me just say this. People are fearful of dating online because they think that everybody online is crazy.
Is an axe murderer.
But the person, you know, and I hate to use that word crazy, you know, loosely, but, you know, the person that you meet at the supermarket could be, you know,
have mental instabilities.
You know, have these same issues as well.
So, yeah.
I mean, I'd say, you know, go online, you know, but do your research if you're connecting with mm-hmm. someone. And, you know, just trust your instincts. I always say that, you know, trust your instincts. And from working directly with survivors for almost over 14 years, I have learned so much through working with them and connecting with them. They are so resilient, and they've taught me so many lessons through connecting with them. And one of the most important lessons is trust your instincts.
Mm.
Trust your instincts. That feeling that you feel that this is not right, that this is not going to be okay, trust that.
Now, does that go for what I call the spectator? So the people who are not in that situation. So like for me, if I were to meet, you know, my cousin's man and I'm like, my spidey senses are tingling. Mm-hmm. Something is off with the way he said this word to her, mm-hmm. or the way he, you know, was like, no, we're not available next weekend or something like that. You know, people don't like to get in other people's businesses.
Right.
But I feel like if my spidey senses are tingling,
yes.
if I meet, you know, your man and something's off, you know, do I say something? Like,
yeah, you don't say something to him. Something to her. Because you don't want anything to escalate.
I know.
You know, you definitely say something to her, you know, and say it in a kind and supportive way. Because a lot of times, you know, because we want to be protective of our friends and our family members, we might be like, uh-uh, girl, run, get out of there, mm-hmm. you know, but we don't know what that person is feeling. You want to definitely, you know, be kind and loving and supportive about it so that if something is going down and when it does, you know, escalate, they can feel comfortable with coming to you.
Okay.
You know, and be like, you know what, Rita, you were right. You know, what you saw was correct. You know, maybe they don't see it now. You know?
So it's the approach then.
Absolutely.
You can't just go and tell her, like, stop talking to him. But it's the approach. Okay, I see Absolutely. That. Because I know that people who have friends or family members and, you know, they meet their significant others for the first time. It's like that. It's always that question. I feel something. Should I say something? Should I not? I don't want the person to take it the wrong way. Or if it's the first time you're meeting the person, it's like, oh, maybe I'm off. But I've always, you know, because that's, I think with domestic violence, that's a huge thing where people don't know how to, you know, get in or get out. Yes. They don't know how to really navigate that
it's
world.
Hard.
So with that being said, I read somewhere online that domestic violence is not a private matter. It's everybody's matter. Hmm. So, you know, I know that some people may have, you know, I don't know, they might have some feelings about that statement, mm-hmm, but mm-hmm. they were just like, no, it's a public matter. It's not a private matter. Mm-hmm. And so what are your thoughts on that in terms of like it being public so that anybody can really come in and like comment on it? Because I guess it's like when you see somebody get beat up on the street, do you get involved or do you say, that's a private matter, let me not?
Well, I always suggest that, you know, if you are seeing someone that's, you know, getting assaulted, don't step in, you know, because you may be harmed mm-hmm. in that process. I would suggest calling, well, I wouldn't suggest calling 911. This is tricky.
Okay.
This is real tricky because, you know, by calling 911, you may escalate the situation as well. We're not sure if that survivor may be ready to leave that situation.
Mm-hmm.
And if the police become involved, that starts a whole ripple effect that you and I know may not be what the survivor wants at that time, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's hard. I don't suggest that you step in. If you personally know this person, though, again, I suggest that you talk to them. But if it's something that's happening on the street, I don't know. I can't call it. It's hard. It's risky.
Yeah.
But it is not a private matter because this issue impacts us so much. It impacts our healthcare system, our educational system. So many different things can, you know, be impacted by these issues. You know, children being removed get thrown into foster care mm-hmm. system, right? How does that affect our community, our schools, right? Where is the funding coming from for all of these different things, right? Hospital hospital bills and all of these different things, long-term mental health issues as a result of, you know, the trauma that they've experienced. So it is a public matter, and that's why I always push prevention. Mm-hmm. I don't suggest you stepping into a situation for the fact that you may be harmed as well.
Yeah.
And, you know, when the police get involved again, you know, it just may turn into a total different situation that that survivor may not want. So,
and I think that's the piece that's a little controversial, because you'll have some people who are like, I'm not going to sit here and watch this woman get beat up in the middle of the street. We need to call law enforcement if I can't get in. Like, or we're letting her, you know, we're letting her leave, you know, with the abuser who knows what he's going to do to her when, you know, she gets home. And I remember there were many times where, you know, you're listening to the 911 calls and it's like a neighbor. I hear a thump. I hear a crash. I hear this. And so when the, I think what people don't understand is that it's not just as simple as calling the police and then they're gonna, you know,
put out the fire.
We don't know what might happen.
Absolutely.
I've had many cases where it wasn't actually like domestic violence in the sense where it could have been like, I think maybe they both were either going at it and the guy wasn't documented and the guy actually might have been the one who was more so abused by the woman in that incident. But because the caller just called 911, police, when they get there, they're not there to be mediators. They're there to arrest. And they got the guy, and the guy was deported back to his country. And the woman came back and actually explained, like, oh my gosh, this is what happened. This is what was really going down. But at that point, that's it. There's no like, oh, let's go back. And so it's, people don't see, like, after the police, like, what the next steps are.
So, Rita, let me just go back a little bit. So, domestic violence is about power and control. Who has the most power and who has the control in a relationship? I'm not talking about an equal relationship where we're both going back and forth, okay? I'm talking about who's losing power, who's losing friends, who's losing community, who's losing air, you know? Who's not able to breathe and come and go as they please, right? So it's about power and control, right? And it's about, you know, these tactics that we talked about. So if, you know, my partner and I having a disagreement, that's not domestic violence. That may just be, you know, us having a disagreement. And all relationships are not perfect, you know. Having disagreements are healthy. But it's about, you know, can I speak up to my partner? Can I say that I don't want to have X, Y, and Z, or I don't want to go here and there? That's the power and control that we're talking about. So we need to be able to distinguish what's what, because I've seen a lot of times as well, isolated incidents where, you know, it may have just been one incident that happened, you know, where, you know, this guy was frustrated and threw something at the wall and a neighbor called the police. And, you know, no injuries or nothing happened to the survivor. But now, as a result of this phone call, this person's now being taken
for criminal mischief.
Absolutely.
Which ends up being in domestic violence, because the criminal mischief happened within a domestic violence situation. So now you have, you've been arrested for domestic violence, where the charge is really criminal mischief because you threw a vase at the wall. Which, not like you were aiming it toward her head, but you just threw it at the wall. You broke something. And now, so if she or he is malicious enough, you know, who knows how far that case can go? Because if they're going to testify and now you have a misdemeanor on your hands. So yeah, so it's really, it's really tricky.
It really is.
But how do we, so I understand the cops thing, because if you're not on the inside, you don't know. But is there a way, is there like a task force? Is there something like that, that like, if I were to see, you know, this woman getting beat up on the street, that I don't call 911, but there's some sort of like task force, like in within the neighborhoods that I can call and they can, you know, and I can, you know, put in the complaint with them and they could have a counselor or somebody go to the location, do an assessment without it being police involved. Is there anything like that?
Well, there are family justice centers where survivors can walk in and receive support and counseling and, you know, whatever services that they need. But no, not every community has that. You know, a lot of times people turn to church you know, for support and services. But a lot of times, you know, our faith institutions are not, you know, they're giving a lot of good advice. You know?
They're not equipped.
They may not even understand what this topic or issue, you know, means to that person.
Or the clergy is probably beating people themselves.
Absolutely. So it's real sticky. No, there's not. And that's why education is important. That's why we need to talk about healthy relationships from kindergarten. What's good touch? What's bad touch? You know,
And you know what is funny, because I don't know if you're aware, but I think a couple of weeks ago I received the information that New York City or New York, I don't know if it's a state thing, but I know it's city at least, is implementing mental health education from K to 12. And so what you're saying, I think, is something that would also be needed if there was a push for that, because kids, you know, a lot of times parents, because of maybe their background and their experience, talking about touching, healthy relationships is not something that they can do, because they're crippled from their experiences, right? So we have children who grow up never knowing, like, what's the appropriate thing. They don't know what to expect from strangers. So I think that's why we have cases now where kids were like, you know, the priest touched me, or the Sunday school teacher touched me, and I didn't know that that was a bad touch. Nobody ever told me. And so now it's like causing the psychological trauma in them. So I feel like something like that.
Definitely.
Like you said, as a child, like from childhood, knowing this is what, because unfortunately a lot of us, and you know, even me personally, I'd not grow in a healthy home. So I don't know, I don't know what that looks like. I've had to look to other family members, television, friends to know what a healthy relationship looks like.
Let's get into television.
Okay? Oh my gosh.
if you could name one show that's displaying a healthy relationship. Give me two.
I don't know about now, but I mean, The Cosby Show.
Well, that's been taken off the air.
I know, because of Father Cosby.
There's no examples of what healthy relationships
are. I mean, all I see right now in terms of black family stuff, and it's not even family. It's Love and Hip Hop. That's not a family. You got Love and Hip Hop. You got Basketball Wives, where nobody's actually a basketball wife. I'm so confused. So, yeah, no, I really don't know of any current shows right now that actually
are modeling good behavior.
No,
and if you don't have that, you know, in front of you or in your community, how do you know what to distinguish what's good or bad?
It's actually really sad, because I think you had mentioned it when we were talking about our event that we'll be having in a couple of weeks, October 29th. Yes. So stay tuned for those details.
Absolutely.
But Fab and Emily.
Oh my!
I mean, Emily's a gorgeous BBW.
Beautiful.
Like, she can get any man she wants, and I'm looking at Fabulous. Like, how did you swing that?
Right.
But I mean, you have young women who are looking at that relationship, and now she's back with him, and they're probably whatever. But they're thinking that maybe that's how it should be, right? It's okay to get beat up on, but it's gonna get better.
Yes. Oftentimes what we see, and I read the comment sections, which are so toxic, and I don't know how celebrities handle these comment sections, but the blame that was coming towards Emily when that went down was extremely, extremely damaging. Because I'm thinking about those that are having that experience that have to read this, calling her dumb, stupid, she wanted it, it's her fault. I mean, and just saying all of these different things just because they see him in the limelight,
yeah,
and think that he wouldn't do something like that.
But I think the other thing too is that some people, they're just like, for a girl who can, you know, who's that pretty, she can get whatever she wants, whoever she wants. Like, if she's staying, she must want it, because she can get. They assume that because she's beautiful, that she must be able to, you know, she knows that she can get whoever she wants. So I think self-esteem. I always say sometimes, because I have friends who are like, but she's so pretty. I'm like, you'll be surprised. Some of the prettiest girls are the ones that have, you know, the deepest wounds.
Absolutely.
And so I think that, you know, like what you just said right now, like the fact that social media, television, the very thing that's raising our children, you know, they don't really have any positive, you know, I guess representatives. Yeah.
Not at all.
So they don't know what a healthy relationship is.
You gotta put on, Good Times.
You better get the box set. Are they still selling box sets for Cosby? Do they pull that too?
I have no idea.
I think there's only one channel showing his or replaying. I think it's New York One.
Oh, really?
I don't know if they are now. Not that there's a verdict.
But you mean TV One?
TV One. There you go. Yes. TV One. Oh, I said gosh. New York One. Girl, I'm tired.
That's all right. I have no idea. It's a sad thing. It's really unfortunate.
So we got into this just very briefly when I just talked about, you know, when I was growing up, what I was able to see. But what do you think are some of the contributing factors to, because The reason I say that is because, you know, I'm consider myself an educated person, right? And so you would think that I would, you know, some people wouldn't expect that if I were to say right now, which is not happening, I'm not in a relationship, so I'm not, I am not experiencing domestic violence, just to put that out there. But let's just say, you know, I'm an attorney, I'm doing things in the community, and I were to tell you all days, you know what, like, I get beat at least once a week. You know, you being in this industry, you wouldn't sit here and be like, really? Like, I don't see that. Like, why? You're so smart, you're so whatever. But the average individual who has no connections, who has no understanding of domestic violence and how it works, might come to me when I, you know, confide to them, like, girl, but you're smarter than that.
Right.
Like, what are you doing? Right. Like, look at you. Like, what's going on? Like, what's wrong with you? Right? And so for me, you know, I would actually internalize that and go back and say, well, why am I allowing this? Like, what is it about me that's allowing this to happen? So are there contributing factors to, like, so for somebody being the victim and even somebody being the abuser, like, what are some of the contributing factors that would lead somebody down the path of being a victim or the path of being an abuser, or if that even exists?
Right. So, I mean, I want to say that domestic violence is a learned behavior, right?
Okay.
And it's not just something that an abuser is going to do to anyone, right? Because they know how, they have, this is about power and control, right? And if they know how to control themselves when the police officer is in their face, or when they're at the supermarket and the teller gives them the wrong change, or, you know, if someone steps on their foot outside, if they can control themselves, you know, throughout those situations, they should be able to control themselves within, behind closed doors with their partner. So it's a learned behavior, and we live in a violent culture. We live in a violent culture, and I don't want to speak to the fact that, you know, black men are more prone to doing this than white men, because what was Columbus? Today's Indigenous People's
Indigenous Day. People's Day,
Indigenous
yes.
People's Day, okay? And they always want to say that the black man is extremely violent, but, you know, white men are just as violent.
So especially when they're drinking beer.
Exactly. So we're not even going to pull that card, okay? I actually had a conversation on the airplane with this woman who was a former social worker that was like, well, what do you think it is? You know, she asked me what I did. She said, what do you think? She was trying to get me to say that, you know, black people are more prone to being violent, and that's not true. Okay, it's not true. Whose communities are being policed more? Who has more resources? So this you may be seeing the person that's, you know, poor, that's coming into the office, that's having this experience. The person that has, you know, a couple of dollars and is able to escape and, you know, move on with their life and not have to call the police, you know, that's not getting reported.
Yeah,
right.
It's not.
Our situations are getting more reported because our communities are heavily policed, and we. I'm gonna stop there.
No, but I agree with you though. I agree with you in that sense. I think a lot of time that I guess would go under. I mean, well, we did address this as the myth that anybody can do it.
Right.
But I think that is the idea that black people or people of color are the primary aggressors when it comes to domestic violence because that's kind of who you see coming into the offices. But I mean, I've watched enough Lifetime, because we were just talking about that Lifetime, the ID channel, like you said, they tell on the white people.
It will tell it.
They tell on the white people.
And snapped.
Snapped.
It will tell it.
So you will look and you're like, you see why now these, you know, those communities are not reporting, because if they're living in Beverly Hills, they might take a couple of slaps to keep that lifestyle up, or they'll self-medicate with, you know, what is it, these opiates and all these other things that, again, that's another topic.
Let's not go there.
It's another topic for another day about, you know, drug use and who's the real abuser.
Yeah.
But you see it all the time. They self-medicate off of, you know, liquor. They self-medicate off of, like, Quaaludes or whatever it is. And so we don't hear about those police reports, but they're not going into the family justice center.
They're not.
So there's no stats for them.
Absolutely.
And so I totally agree with that. But in terms, do you find that, and I like that you touched on the fact that it is a learned behavior, because sometimes I think one of the myths was that the person just snapped. The person just snapped and that was that. And so for me, I'm like, it can't just be the person snapped, you know, like, because I get frustrated
absolutely
on a daily, but I'm not about to go beat up nobody.
No. It's about self-control.
Exactly.
It's about self-control, exhibiting that self-control as well. And as I mentioned, if that person could control themselves in front of other authority figures and people that they connect with and communicate with, it should be no problem, right?
Now, in terms of the learned behavior, are we talking about primarily what you see within the home or the immediate community?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And sexism, like women are supposed to be treated this way and that way. And, mm-hmm. you know, they're supposed to be doing this and that. See, I don't want to get too deep, Rita, because this is being recorded, but there are a lot of layers. There are a lot of layers as to, you know, why we see this happening a lot within our community.
Well, I definitely think it's something that we have to talk about, and maybe not necessarily in this show, but I feel like maybe during the event that, that we're having on October 29th in Brooklyn, New York. I think that that's something that we should talk about, as we have to talk about it.
Yes.
Because it's good to have other people weigh in as well too, because I think that every year there's this big push for domestic violence awareness. Mm-hmm. Community leaders mm-hmm. come out, but domestic violence awareness should not just be about October.
Absolutely.
That's number one. Right. It should be a year round thing, and yes. it should be something that happens in churches, because yes. people, like we were talking about earlier, you know, the church may not be the best place to really learn about domestic violence right. awareness right. because the church isn't really talking about it like that. I mean, mm-hmm. there are churches where the pastor and the clergy know that domestic violence is happening
yes.
in their gates. In fact, the first elder might be the one beating up on his wife.
Yes.
So they're not, sometimes they might not be so inclined to have people come in and talk about domestic violence. And then sometimes the church members too might feel uncomfortable. Like they won't go to a domestic violence event because now you're triggering. Now the husband's like, oh, you're going to let people know
right.
that you're experiencing domestic violence when they see you at this event. So it's really, it's a little bit difficult and challenging sometimes, because the people that you would need to kind of help you get access
yeah.
are the very people who might actually be preventing
yeah,
you.
Might be a barrier.
Exactly. Absolutely. So I think we definitely need to find creative ways mm-hmm. to talk about domestic violence.
Yes.
You know, make it a traveling thing. I don't
yes.
know. Take the show on the road
yes.
type thing. I think it's definitely important, because I can say that my son, he's 11. I don't want him thinking that, you know, he can treat women however he wants
right.
to.
Mm-hmm.
And I also don't want, you know, young girls like my goddaughters growing up thinking that they can treat men out. Because I've actually seen the reverse, where a woman is, you know, talking down to a man. And like you said earlier in the show, domestic violence is not about the black and blue eyes.
Right.
It's about the verbal abuse. You know, you're not good enough, the
yes.
put downs. Mm-hmm. And women do that to men a lot, too.
Absolutely.
And
absolutely.
So...
emasculating men.
Yeah, that's absolutely. Actually a form of domestic violence.
Yes, it is.
I'm pretty sure the men are happy to hear that. Where, you know, it is a form of domestic
it
violence.
Is. Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's something that should be talked about,
mm-hmm.
too.
Mm-hmm.
And so I find that men... a lot of times don't like to come out to domestic violence workshops or, you know, or talks, because one, maybe, you know, they don't want to be seen and they don't be associated with that, because maybe they feel like if they go, people might think that they're going through it.
Right.
And two, sometimes they feel like, you know what, they may not have much to contribute, because they're like, well, I don't beat nobody.
Yeah.
So, but I think it's important for men to attend these types
yes.
of talks. So like, what are some ways you could think that we can get, you know, not just the community, but get men out involved to these types of events? Or like, do we need to specially create events for men to talk about this issue?
I think that that's important. Definitely create spaces where men can feel safe to talk about, you know, these experiences and
mm-hmm.
these challenges that they may face. There's a great organization called A Call to Men.
Okay.
And what they specifically focus on is engaging men and boys in these conversations,
mm-hmm.
right?
Okay.
So it starts early, you know, when your son is on the football field and his coach is saying, you throw like a girl,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
So now you're putting down girls. You're basically saying that, you know, girls are less than, you know, because you throw like a girl. Ain't nothing wrong with throwing like a girl. We've seen campaigns, right?
Listen.
We can do amazing things,
yes,
right?
Yes, we can.
So, you know, boys are brought up very early to, like, withhold their feelings. They can't cry. You're soft, you know, if you cry, or if you... play with a, you know, something pink or a
yeah.
doll. You're a girl, or
and
you're
I'm,
feminine. And I'm I mean, and I understand.
I'm guilty of it. I'm not going to lie. I'm going to sit here right now on, you know, not, I don't know if this is national radio, but radio.
Radio.
And tell people that. I'm actually guilty of that. And I've actually had to check myself as a you know, a parent to say, you know, because I used to do that thing where my son would try to, like, grab my purse. And I'm like, no, I got it. I got it. Thank you. Thank you. I got it. Or if he would start to, you know, cry, I'm like, listen here, young man, you're not supposed to be crying. Like, I used to have to. So now I had to realize, like, this is a kid.
Yeah.
And, you know, if I'm sitting here checking him like this, when he grows up, and I'm not there, he's going to be, like, inhibited to do certain things, absolutely. To, you know, navigate certain spaces only because I'm like, you can't wear pink.
Right.
Or you can't touch a purse.
Right.
So I've had to check myself as a parent. So I no longer do that. But I was doing it. And so I had to realize.
I understand. I definitely understand. Like, you know, parents fear that, you know, that child is going to be feminine or grow up to be homosexual. That is not true. And none of those thoughts or feelings or a child crying has nothing to do with them being homosexual or, you know, being feminine. These are feelings. And a lot of times men are just taught that they can be angry and aggressive. And they're holding back all of these feelings. Like, what are they going to be doing when they turn 22, 23 years old?
Those
same emotions and feelings that, you know, they should have been able to express when they were younger.
And that we as parents had a good deal of work in helping them prevent that. Yeah. Yes.
So let them express themselves, you know, let them cry, let them, you know, talk about how they're feeling. You know?
What is this name of this organization again? Is it
A Call to Men?
Okay. So those of you who are listening who, you know, are interested, I guess, in or have young boys or you're a man yourself and you want to get involved in an organization or find a space to talk about these things. And I think that would be a great, because I think a lot of the aggression that we see in our communities come from the fact that they were not able to actually experience their feelings and express themselves. And so if we can start from now. And, you know, and at parents out there, even if you're not a parent, you're a godparent, you're an aunt, an uncle. Like, if you have anything to deal with raising children or exposed to children, you know, you have to do your part, too, in making sure that these children, these teenage boys, teenage girls are able to express themselves. And we kind of have to check ourselves, our cultural.
Yeah.
I think it's that cultural stuff.
I'm not naive now. I grew up in New York, you know, went to high school in East New York, Brooklyn. Maxwell, shout out to Maxwell, right? Live in South Jamaica, Queens. So I know that these layers and shells that we have to protect ourselves with, you know, in order to navigate these rough streets are real. You know, it's real.
Yeah, you can't be a punk on these streets.
You cannot be a punk on these streets.
You can't be a punk. Like,
New York would chew you up. I don't know why people want to move here. I'm like, what? This place will chew you up and spit you out.
And the kids, it's like the kids are so cruel. Like, even with my son, like, he's in middle school now. So, you know, he's going through that time where it's like, listen, you know, the other day he called me talking about, hey, call me an Uber. Somebody wants to beat me up. I was like, whoa.
Yeah.
Uber. Like, you better take that hit.
It's crazy.
You better take it because ain't nobody calling you an Uber. But that's what's happening. That's what's happening.
And especially in our community, like, especially with our men, we get these messages forced on our men that they have to be hyper masculine, that they gotta be tough, they gotta be strong, they gotta do all of these, you know, thugged out things.
Yeah.
And that's not even who they are.
Not at all. And unfortunately, some of that ends up translating later on into domestic violence situations because they never figured out how to express themselves or they weren't never allowed to. Mm-hmm. So this domestic violence conversation just goes deeper than just, like I said, the black and blues.
Yes.
And I think we need to really start engaging in either roundtables and real discussions and creating spaces for people to really get to the root of some of these issues.
Yes.
And like, I know for me, culture played a big role, you know, being West Indian, being Haitian, domestic violence is not something you speak about. You get hit, then you suck it up, you go to church, you pray about it.
Yes.
You know, I don't know, you pray for him to, you know, for you to outlive him. I don't know what the prayer is, but that's pretty much it. And then you move on.
Yeah.
Like, you would never dare call the police ever because, you know, you're like, well, what about him? What will the church say?
Yes.
What will the community say? Mm. And so there's a lot of that I think we need to kind of like shed too. Like, we don't need to care about what others are going to say. It's about you. But that takes time because that's insecurity. That's childhood. That's a whole bunch of different things.
Ooh.
We talked about so much today, but I think your organization that, you know, you created, I think is a great platform
for a lot of these things that we're talking about here today. And so I definitely see expansion for you. I'm claiming it in the name of Jesus.
I receive it in the name
yes,
of Jesus.
Yes. So that we really get, because, you know, when I think about these issues, like, you know, I work, I'm an attorney, I do like labor law stuff now, but these are the things that truly, you know, matter to me, like yes. being able to get into the community and talking about real things, because yes. I grew up in a house that you couldn't talk about things.
Right.
I wasn't allowed to talk. Right. And for the most part, my friends thought that I was very, very like either guarded, standoffish, like I didn't even really give hugs until a couple of years wow. ago. So, and for me realizing this right now in my 30s, I'm like, wow, like how much of life did I miss out on? Yeah. You know, if I yeah. just dealt with some of these demons mm-hmm. earlier on, if I had a space, a sister circle to talk,
yes.
I could have been such a healthier person.
Absolutely.
So I think it's really important that we do this.
And,
but
and read a therapy. I'm going to plug therapy.
Yes, therapy. Therapy. I do talk about therapy a lot yes. on one of the podcasts we did, but on the radio show too. We're definitely going to get into
absolutely.
That. That's one thing that is lacking in the Black community. I do see some pushes for it. There are a lot yes. of organizations that are really making
trying
a big
to
push.
It.
Yeah. So I think, mm-hmm. you know, I think we're getting into or we're heading into the right direction.
Yes.
But yeah, so.
So important.
So important. So yes. So guys, thank you so much for tuning in today. We plugged in a couple of times here. We haven't
yes.
given the official title, but I think we're calling the event Behind the Post.
Yes, Behind the Post.
Behind the Post. Goals. Yes, Relationship Goals. We are going to have this event at the Brooklyn Commons
yes.
in the Gentleman's Factory space on October 29th. I think it's from 6:30 to 8:30, but more details are going to come out. You guys will see posts on my social media. But we definitely are. I mean, this is going to be a really, really great event. I am so happy to have Audace
yes.
here. It's going to be the organizer, leader in a
yes,
sense.
I'm
I've seen her do presentations and amazing. But thank you, Audace,
awesome.
For coming on this show. This is the first time you're actually on According to RP.
Yes.
You were
time.
On Frida's World before.
Yes.
But thank you so much for coming on here and just sharing your knowledge. You know, you are somebody who's from the community. You're a Black woman. And, you know, you have so much experience in different realms. So it's,
yes.
you know, you have the DA experience. You have your organization. You have, you know, technological
yes.
domestic violence. Like, who?
Right.
Like, where does that even come from?
Right.
So, you know, you definitely have, like, you know, a wealth of knowledge. And your background is very diverse. So, you know, you're definitely probably one of the best. People I would say to come and talk
you,
about
Rita.
these issues. So how could we contact you if somebody wants to reach out to you about your organization? Like, how can we reach out to you?
Sure. So what I do want to say is for anyone that is experiencing domestic violence, I would like to say to you that you are not alone, and what you're experiencing is not your fault, and help is available. You do not have to go through this by yourself. So please, if you are, you know, comfortable with walking into a family justice center, you live in New York City, you can walk into any family justice center. They're located throughout the five boroughs. You can call 311 and get that information. And, you know, it's free and it's confidential. How to reach me. My contact information is 347-928-7418. Again, that's 347-928-7418. And what I do is I provide trainings around teen dating violence, sex trafficking, domestic violence, and I can come out and speak to folks within schools, clergy, anyone that's willing to listen about this topic and issue. Thank you so much.
All right. No, thank
yes.
you so much, Audace. And I'm sure we will have you back because, you know, we have Sexual Assault Awareness
yes.
Month coming up.
Mm-hmm.
So we definitely will have you back to talk about some of these very important issues. So, guys, it's a wrap for According to RP. I'm so happy you guys tuned in. If you guys want to send any questions in with regard to what you heard today, definitely send it to AccordingToRP@gmail.com, or you can catch us on Facebook or on Instagram. And have a good night. See you next week.
Bye.
You were listening to According to RP on WJMS Radio.
About time you tuned in.
Tune in each and every Thursday. I can't wait to come back.